Hi, this is Katrina and Sass, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com. Hey, it's Katrina.
And this is Sass.
And here we are at Zooming in the Lens.
Woo-hoo! What are we zooming in today? Actually, you know what, Katrina? I was wondering if you got that article that I sent to you on cryo, like the freezing. It's not called cryosurgery. It's called cryogenics.
Yes.
That's it. Cryogenics. Did you get that article?
I did.
Okay. Talk to me.
Well, it seems that what cryogenics is about is, for right now, at least for the topic that you brought it up for me, was about helping people with pain, fibromyalgia, joint pain. And you go into, I think I even have the article right here. It was in Business Insider. It was called, yeah. I was cryogenically frozen for 3 minutes. Here's what it was like. And it came out on the 31st of this year. And they go into a machine, and this machine, let me see if I could get to the part.
Like the client goes into the machine. It's like a freezing sauna. It's like a sauna, but it freezes you instead of heats you up.
That's right. It's $90 a session.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's not that unusual. But the thing is can you even imagine freezing, like paying to be frozen? The thought of that makes me shiver.
Especially when you could just live in Canada for free.
Touché, D'Artagnan. Nice little jab to your northern neighbor.
Oh, I know. Who am I kidding? I just love the snow. I love winter.
Oh, well, let's switch places then, sister.
So this thing is saying, this article is saying that for $90 a session, they will cryogenically freeze your body for 3 minutes at a time. 3 minutes.
Gives a whole new meaning to freezing your balls off, if you know what I'm saying.
You got it. And this person says, you first walk in, and in my case, we are greeted by an effervescent Colombian man. And it is 6 feet tall, the machine.
Oh my God, that wouldn't work for anybody over 6 feet.
Sub 200 degree cryo sauna chamber. It looks like an upscale salon, at least where this person went, it did. And, you know what? I think the Colombian guy was 6 feet tall. I have no idea how tall it is, but cooled nitrogen then starts to flood the machine.
Oh, God.
Plummeting temperatures to negative 200 degrees.
No, thanks. I don't care. I mean, I'd have to be in some serious, serious pain to even consider that. But it's not just pain, right? It's also supposedly does amazing things for your skin.
Yeah.
Although oh my goodness. What will they think of next? Hanging out of a plane by one finger as you go over the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah.
It's all to do with aging, I think. Anti-aging, right?
Of course. It says that there's no moisture in the air, so your body does not succumb to frostbite.
Right.
But it doesn't mean you don't feel cold. It says that it feels like streaking naked through a Boston campus in mid-January type cold.
Okay, because we all know what that feels like.
Right. That's right.
Oh, geez. And no thanks. Again, I have to reiterate, no thank you.
But this guy felt great afterwards. They make you do some cardio to heat your body back up. And his skin looked amazing. And his pain went away for a little while, but obviously the more you do it, the better reactions and the longer lasting you're going to have. And yeah, I mean, you are right. It is all about aging, right?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
I mean, it's that- aging and pain. I could see doing it for pain, but to me, I think it's working. And listen, just take what I say with a grain of salt, but it's working because you're putting your body in fight or flight.
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it?
I would think.
But why would that regenerate your body?
Because that's of the endorphins that flood through your body and all the healing hormones and biochemicals that come to the rescue when it thinks that you're dying of frostbite, even though you have no way of getting frostbite because there's no moisture. But it senses the same thing, why we get dizzy when we get really overheated and dehydrated. There's an element of a high involved in that.
Oh, man. Anyways, no, thank you. I can't even, no. No. Did you read the Washington Post article that I sent you?
I grazed it. But you know what?
What?
Speaking of cryogenics, before you talk about that, if I could interrupt for just a second.
Uh-huh.
Timothy Leary.
Uh-huh. I know.
One of the most fantastic thinkers, wild, really led the LSD revolution with Ram Dass, taught at Harvard with Ram Dass.
Hung out with me on the couch for Christmas Eve.
Oh, please tell that story. Just like
Well, not the second one, though. I mean, he's like, are you going to tell me about he froze his head?
Well, it turns out that I don't think it's true. But the rumor was that he was going to be cryogenically frozen and his head was...
Just his head.
Yeah, but there was an audio that I had heard of him saying, maybe my body, maybe just my head. But then there's lots of stuff out there also saying that he did nothing of the such and that he got cremated and his ashes were blown into space with another gentleman whose name I can't remember right now. So I'm not sure what's true.
Mm-hmm.
But for a long time, that was surfacing as the rumor of what happened to Timothy Leary. And there is a YouTube video online that is supposedly showing this, which I'll list on functionalyogaonline.com/blog after this episode. And you could go check out the video, whether it's real or not. Don't blame me if it's not. But yeah, so the cryogenic thing is very interesting.
Oh my God! Yeah, but what do you mean a video? Like a video of the head, of his body being? That's disgusting. I don't want to watch that.
Well, you know what? I didn't want to watch it until I found out that it might be fake, and I could actually find out if it actually is or not. But
it's
I haven't.
Fake.
But you see him after he's passed away, and the doctors all around him, and then you see his beautiful head get decapitated.
Removed. Oh, that's disgusting. Katrina, no.
But it's probably not real. Okay, that's all I'll say.
Yeah, it's not. It's disgusting. Did I mention it's disgusting? Anyways, moving on.
I'm going to send you the video now.
Moving on. I want to talk about this article. This is the main thing that I really wanted to talk to you about today. This article about life extension, human life extension, or eradication of death altogether. Like, this is the big thing in very, very, very wealthy people's circles these days, apparently, according to this article. You know, all the Silicon Valley billionaires and... This is apparently something that people are really interested in doing, either living forever or living as long as they possibly can.
Wow.
Which brings up all kinds of bizarre ethical, moral, religious, spiritual, what have you types of questions, right?
Yes.
Like, did you read this thing?
I skimmed it.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. There's one quote from this guy whose name is Leon Cass, who is a physician and an ethicist. And this quote, he poses a philosophical question. And the question is, could life be serious or meaningful without the limit of mortality?
What do you think?
How about that for a question? Well, that, I mean, it completely would change the landscape of our existence, of our reality, 100%. But the thing that's most bizarre about all of this is that I don't think immortality would necessarily be available to everyone, right? And here's another thing that he says. He goes, would it not be the ultimate injustice if only some people could afford a deathless existence? If the world were divided not only into rich and poor, but into mortal and immortal?
Oof.
Oh!
Oof.
Yeah, it's a little, there's a heck of a question going on right there, isn't there? I mean, like, seriously?
Wow. I mean, that's a giant topic, huh?
It's pretty giant, I think. Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, like, it reminds me of Atlantis, all the legends of Atlantis, you know, the legendary land that disappeared into the ocean because it exploded, and all the experiments that they were allegedly doing, the scientific and technological experiments that they were doing there, like in biogenetics, et cetera, where they were, you know, splicing together humans and animals and all kinds of wild stuff, somewhat similar to the Second World War, I think, where there was all kinds of the Germans were doing experiments. I'm sure it wasn't just the Germans, however, let's get real here. But people were doing all kinds of experiments in genetics and, you know, weird stuff. But the question here to me is, would extending life in a meaningful manner, would that destroy our cultures and our societies?
I could see it on both places.
Yeah,
I mean, can see it in the realm of the way we experience death is so critical to how we live life.
Indeed it is.
But I also feel that living life has to do with technological breakthroughs, and the humans are able to progress in certain areas. And so who am I to say what's nature and what's not?
Yeah, it seems like those lines are blurred these days anyway. You know, like,
yes,
like we're really living in a matrix, in a construct, in a virtual reality half the time, even just by virtue of how much time we spend online and not interacting with each other in a physical manner, like in the same room. I mean, even you and I right now are talking through technology, and anyone who's listening will be listening through technology. They're not sitting with us. It's not, you know,
right.
It's pretty, this stuff is like, these are big, big questions. I personally think that the world would collapse. You know, we can barely sustain the amount of humanity that's living on the world at this time. Can you imagine if more people are being born and born and born and nobody's dying?
Well, that's what brings up the fact that if you knew that you would never die, okay, think of it this way. I'm just trying to get it out of my brain. Do we think that humans are generally asleep in the thinking process that what is it about us that is propelling us to do things like making decisions whether to follow a career, whether to make money, whether to work out or not. I mean, everything is this underlining asleep, you know, because it's subconscious, and a lot of it we try to write off as just being a natural instinct. But that natural instinct will change if we're not going to die. Uh-huh. And it could help some people take chances and risks that they never would have taken in life. But it also can stop humanity as we know it. Because what would stop somebody if we're not walking around feeling like there's, and I guess there would be ramifications, actually. So, you know, because there would still maybe be prison and rules and things like that. But if you knew that dying in prison wouldn't happen, would you go out and kill somebody?
Oh, my God. That's a solid question, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, really, we would find out very quickly what is our deep-seated beliefs, what is our personality, what is our stories versus what is the truth of this species.
Yeah, and our ethics and our morals. But the thing is you would still be able to die. It's just that you wouldn't die naturally. In other words, you could still be executed or you could still die in an accident, but you wouldn't die of old age type of thing. It's almost as if you would be forever at a certain age, whatever age it was when the technology came in that you could use. You'd stay that age forever.
I see.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But
it's horrific.
If I had to keep that 25-year-old ignorant brain, and I mean, there's lots of great things about it, but I mean, you have to know this so you could pick the age.
Yeah, exactly. No, you wouldn't stay. The body would stay 25, but the mind and the gathering of experience wouldn't be different. You would still your body would be 25, but your mind and experience would be however long you'd been here.
But I think they're synonymous. They're synonymous. The reason why getting older, I'll add in the caveat of mindfulness, or at least practicing. Uh-huh. If there's no changes in you physically, nothing seems real to us. That's why when we're younger and people would say to us, you better enjoy what you have now. I mean, my sisters used to do that to me all the time. Like, yeah, you feel that way now, but wait till you hit 25, wait till you hit 35. They just kept going and going. But, the reason why I think art is art and music is also because of the deterioration of our human body, and then being able to go into practices and even religions to extricate yourself from the one-dimensional relationship we all have that of thinking that we're our bodies.
Oh, that is fascinating.
So
you're absolutely right. I mean, wow. Yeah. Just like the thousands of layers that this brings up, you know, the idea of immortality, like gods, you know, we're immortal gods, but intriguingly enough, only available to those who have the financial means. It's like, whoa, talk about.
Yeah, that's not so great. Because if I did have the financial means, the guilt that I have been instilled with as a child from my wonderful family, I could never walk down the street looking fantastic and being 90 years old and seeing all these other people who don't. I couldn't handle that.
Isn't that interesting? That's so amazing. I know exactly what you mean. And it would, I mean, it really takes you deeper into the question of what are you here for? Why are we here? You know, that eternal, that question.
Well,
why
you know
are
what?
We here? For just for ourselves?
Oh, no way. But you know? I do think that, I know I'm going to sound really morbid, but the suffering that we go through as humans is such an intricate part of our spiritual, metaphysical, even emotional, universal growth.
Expand, yeah.
It is. It just, it is. I mean, think about in your mind right now, all the things that have altered and changed you because of suffering, even if it's from breaking a thumb to getting a chronic disease or a terminally ill disease. I mean, obviously you and I don't know. Well, actually I do know about having a terminal disease from when I was younger, but that's another topic. But in thinking about that, most of my moments were learned from the suffering after I could gain a sense of humor about it and I had enough space away from it. So imagine if the physical body, now do we need the physical suffering of aging? There's other suffering, plenty of other suffering that we'd have. It's like a smorgasbord of suffering. But we wouldn't be able to practice the non-clinging of the physical body, and that lesson of watching yourself aging, even just a little bit, from 25 to 30, from 30 to 35, from 35 to 40, all of these are these benchmarks of life that it just would alter so much that I don't know if it's worth it.
Oh, I think it's the most horrific idea known to man.
You do.
To extend life like that, or to eradicate death in any way. It's so intriguing, though. They're talking about uploading the contents of someone's cortex, whatever those parts of the brain that hold memory, et cetera, to computers. You know, like all just the wildest. It's like science fiction. It isn't like it. It is it. All this stuff was thought of and written about by science fiction authors in the past 100 years, you know? And now, if you want to predict the future, read science fiction. That's all there is to, as far as I'm concerned, because everything, I told you, I think I've said this before, everything I ever saw on Star Trek is now actually, like, iPads. That existed on Star Trek before anyone had ever heard of an iPad.
But where are the flying cars?
They exist. There's flying cars.
Where are the flying cars?
Oh, there's prototypes all over the place. Just look it up on the internet and you will see it. There's everything you ever saw. Mm. Maybe not tribbles. I don't know about tribbles, but the trouble with tribbles. But there's even the sliding doors, you know, a sensor that opens the doors.
That is so true.
Go to the supermarket, you know, Walmart, anywhere. It opens and closes.
Yes, very true. Know?
They did not have that when I was a kid, just like the rotary phones, et cetera. Whereas, like Louis C.K. said, you get pissed off at anybody who had a zero in their phone number because you had to wait the entire time from the zero to go.
Right. You know, I think the people that maybe feel like it would be beneficial to, I mean, it's not even saying living forever. Is it saying living forever? Or is it just saying not aging?
It's saying eradicating death, so you can take that how you want. I don't really, I'm not eradicating natural death.
So, well, see, all of those sorts of concepts, they come from the mind. And the mind is always trying to fix and run from that which we cannot control.
Which is basically everything.
Right. So that would be
what
this is. This is us not facing our fears. This is us saying, I want to be able to control what I look like and when I die. And although I am a huge proponent of somebody who's has a terminal illness and is not going to die pleasantly, that it should be their option. But this is different. It's different because I think it's generated from fear. And I'm not saying that picking when you're going to die when you have a terminal illness isn't, but at least you have a roundabout idea. And I just feel like life is meant to be affecting lots of people. You're one life, that butterfly effect kind of thing. You know, your one life is affecting many others, and maybe your constant suffering is affecting somebody else. Maybe your aging is affecting this person here, your family member. And I think it's a mind's game. And you know what? I think I have, let's hear some wise words from somebody else.
Lord knows we don't have any.
Yeah, really. From somebody else. Let's hear some wise words. End it there.
And we can't say that it's a good thing for everything to go on living. From the very simple demonstration that if we enable everybody to go on living, we overcrowd ourselves. That we're like an unpruned tree. And so therefore, one person who dies in a way is honorable because he's making room for others. And the panic that all life everywhere must be saved, although each one of us individually will naturally appreciate it when anybody saves our life, if we apply that case, you see, all around, we can see that it's not workable. We can also look further into it and see that if our death could be indefinitely postponed, we would not actually go on postponing it indefinitely. Because after a certain point, we would realize that isn't the way in which we wanted to survive. Why else would we have children? Because children arranged for us to survive in another way. By, as it were, passing on a torch so that you don't have to carry it all the time. There comes a point where you can give it up and say, now you work. It's a far more amusing arrangement for nature to continue the process of life through different individuals than it is always with the same individual. Because as each new individual approaches life, life is renewed. And one remembers how fascinating the most ordinary everyday things are to a child, because they see them all as marvelous, because they see them all in a way that is not related to survival and profit. When we get to thinking of everything in terms of survival and profit, we do. Then the shapes of scratches on the floor cease to have magic, and most things, in fact, cease to. So therefore, in the course of nature, once we have ceased to see magic in the world anymore, we are no longer fulfilling nature's game of being aware of itself. No point in it. And so we die. And so something else comes to birth, which gets an entirely new view. And so nature's self-awareness is a game worth the count. It is not, therefore, natural for us to wish to prolong life indefinitely. But we live in a culture where it has been rubbed into us in every conceivable way that to die is a terrible thing. And that is a tremendous disease from which our culture in particular suffers. And we notice it firstly in the way in which death is swept under the carpet.
I love Alan Watts. I love that guy. Wow. Anyways, well, he put it all pretty succinctly. And I mean, just look at nature. If nature dies, if things in nature die, then that can only be the correct way of things. It has to be, because that's what has sustained, that's what created, this planet was created and has sustained itself this long by doing that, just that, having a lifespan and dying and being reborn again in a new form. A form always has a limited existence. Thank God.
Well, that's available on YouTube if anybody wants it. It's just Alan Watts, Must Life Go On and On? And that's one perception. We're all having different perceptions of it. But I just don't know how we would, what we would look like as a race if we didn't have the separation from who we think we are. And the body is really doing that. Aging is really doing that for us naturally. And I mean, I'm not sitting here going, yeah, can't wait, but I'm not asking the suffering to come to me, but through the practices, I am trying to understand that suffering is a part of human existence for now. And what's going to happen, Sass, is going to happen regardless. So what is what is. There's no really controlling much of anything, because if this does happen, then there'll be ramifications of it, just like there is in our climate, just like there is in the polar ice caps and our water drought right now in California. I mean, what is will be what is, but I think why this is a great conversation for us too is to see that maybe this could bring some clarity to all of us as to our level of fear of aging and death, and how that can also translate inside a lot of us as irrelevancy, being the fear of being irrelevant. And if we stay a certain age and or we can control the way we die, there's this false feeling of relevance. And we are both relevant and not relevant. And that duality is going at all times of our lives. Of being able to know love is by being able to know hate. And of course, yeah, that's a belief system, sure. And you don't have to sign up for that. But I think what's more important is to figure out why we would want to be here and stay here, especially if we are not believing in ourselves as much as we possibly could while we have this one precious life. Uh-huh. And people, you know, our prior podcasts about doing what we love, making money, and trying to find a purpose, and going underneath that to see why there has to be a purpose, could all be this fear of irrelevancy, of the unknown. But really, so much of what we're already doing is completely unknown. You don't know when you wake up in the morning what's going to happen that day. You think you know. You think you know when you meet a girl or a guy and you're going to have a relationship and you start the honeymoon and every part of you tells you this is it, this is it, this is it, this is forever, or this isn't it, this isn't it. And we just never know anything. And so trying to walk around and imagine life as if we knew exactly what was going to happen, at least with the aging and death part of it, seems like we'd be missing out on the intricacies that make us human. And it, what will be, will be. Yeah. I mean, we're not controlling anything. I'd embrace it if it was here, because that would just be the next thing I have to practice. But maybe this can help that discussion as well, towards being free from the things that we feel are the questions in life that are stopping us from really going after life. And what I'm speaking of in particularly, I guess, is that career decision of, you know, how do you know when to stop a job? How do you know when you're doing something that you really do love, or maybe you're doing it and you've convinced yourself of loving it? But getting into the heart, and getting, maybe even more importantly, getting underneath just the chatter of our mind can maybe help us see that our motivations and our inspiration behind so much of every day's daily activity is from this deep-seated fear and lack of relationship we have to death and aging and dying.
Absolutely.
So what would you do? Just think about it for a second. What would you do? Because it's a good exercise. If you thought you can stop the process of aging right now and you can control how you would die, what would you honestly do with your life, with your daily life, with who you spent your time with? And that could be a way to get underneath the dialogue. If some of us are out there having this perpetual daily activity and decision-making that is really rooted in a fear of being out of control and aging.
Oh my God, there goes the entire industry of plastic surgery. That was a joke, because obviously plastic surgery is for many other things other than just changing your aging, your look of aging. It's also for repairing people who've been in horrific accidents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, but you know what, though? I even have to say, I have to stick up for plastic surgery a little bit. I mean, I haven't had anything, you know, cut into in my face or anything, but I'm sticking up for it only because it depends on the who in you is getting the plastic surgery. Yeah. And what I mean by that is that if I am getting plastic surgery because I don't want to face the suffering of my inner dialogue, because that's all it ever is. Even if you're thinking it's other people, it's still your inner dialogue that you're creating, because they're for your perceptions of what's being created. Correct. If you're doing plastic surgery from this place of trying to escape, go ahead. But it is going to reappear somewhere else in our life. That challenge, that running away, that not facing our fears or those demons in the cave. But if you can do plastic surgery because you are not doing it to prolong or avoid suffering, and you're playing with the different shifting of perceptions and awareness, I personally think it depends on what part of you, who. I mean, if you're in the heart completely, the last thing you're going to be thinking about is plastic surgery, I would imagine. I'm not in the heart completely, but there are definitely times when I'm practicing when I care less about what I look like. At least the dialogue in my mind is reporting less.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think it depends on the motivation and the intention for the plastic surgery, because if you could quiet your mind a little bit, if every day you wake up and that part of your brain is saying, you're so old, you're so old. Oh my God, what are we going to do? Oh, this is horrible. I got to go to this high school reunion. It's 20 years, 30 years, 10 years, whatever it is. And you can't quiet that for a second to think about practicing or finding a new job or doing any of the daily things and lifelong things that we have to do. But you're practicing and you're aware and you're awake that I'm about to alter that which I was given. And I am aware that I am not this body, but I want to wake up for the next however long that surgery would last and quiet the mind a little bit, at least with that piece of self-suffering, so that I can practice or that I can be a better mother or be a better wife or be a better whatever is important to you. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because if we're not our body, we're not our body. It doesn't mean don't take care of it, but then you'd have to have the opinion that plastic surgery is not taking care of your body. And that's just subjective. Who knows what it is?
Yeah, I'm not of the opinion that we're not our body, though, personally. I think we are, that's part of us. I think, you know what I mean? I think it's the body is most definitely a part of what we are in this expression.
Well, of course, yeah. this incarnation, but
I'm just
we're beyond that. Of course. You want to take care of the temple. You want to try to use this incarnation in all its facets, in the hearing and the seeing and the thinking and the body, for your journey in whatever that might be, your dharma. But you know, if you're dabbling in the alternative thinking realm or the spiritual realm, you know, whether you believe in reincarnation or not, even if we just drop this body and never have another body, there's parts of us that are always with us. And there are parts of us that renew themselves, including every few years we have cell regeneration. And
your liver every 7 months, apparently. I mean, like, there,
really?
And then there's people who say that you have a new body every time you blink.
Wow.
I know, it could go on forever. I love what you said about cosmetic surgery. I think I agree with you 100%. 100% on that.
There's no reason to ostracize anybody, because I think it's all okay as long as we're looking at it through the right lens, or I won't even say right, but just a lens, and you're conscious of the lens that you're perpetuating, because even though you think it has to only do a plastic surgery, it's just not how the human mind works. It takes these things, like when you teach a child, say you're on holiday for a month and you tell that child it's okay here because it's really safe here. You know, you're talking to a 3-year-old or something. It's really safe here. So you could go right out the front door and walk down the street to your aunt and uncle's holiday house, and that's fine. And then when you get your child back to the city, and that child is going to be, oh, well, I guess it's okay. It's safe to. And it's not because the child's stupid. It's because we are just collaborations of our thought processes as we're along the journey. And the mind, the belief systems and who we think we are, to me, is just memory. And if you're going to try to live in the present, memory is there. You don't have to chase it away, but it is just memory, and that's in the past, and you're the only one carrying that around with you.
That's so right. And how can you ever prove that your memory is real? It's not real. It's just a construct.
And imagine if people, if we all really lived like that. So I was a musician, and that created who I am now, but it doesn't mean that I'm not a musician.
Of course not.
Like those finals, those, like, we're always looking for these like finalities all the time. Like, I am this and now I'm this and now I'm this. So how come you're not doing that? But like, you're everything. And the only person limiting us is ourselves. So that's trust. That's trust. And I know, you know, we've kind of got to go, but Sass, what a great topic.
Oh my God, we could go on forever. But can you just, I just want to say that one more time. The only person limiting us is ourselves. Mm. Always and forever. Amen. And that is the truth. I mean, as far as I know, truth.
And what about just even limiting yourself and lack of forgiving that you're limiting yourself? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're the hardest on each other. On ourselves.
On ourselves, yeah. The worst critics. Always. Always. Oh, yeah. Just, that was, I could talk about that all day.
Oh, it just brings up so many issues that I love about aging and dying and the way we handle that in this country is just horrific. I mean, I just read statistics in the New York Times about a month ago. I think the article was called The D Word. And it was it was about, you know, how many years doctors in medicine have to practice. You know, just to actually become a physician. And it was, I'm going to mess up the statistics, so I'll make sure to post this up on the blog as well. But for lack of remembering, let's just say that 7 years it took to be a doctor, which is completely wrong, but I'm being hypothetical. Out of those 7 years.
It's not wrong. Right.
I don't remember. But then, it's
then
longer.
If you go into a specialty, it takes longer. Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah. Out of those 7 years, let's just say a month is spent on dealing with dying.
Craziness.
These statistics are worth for me to post up because the dying and the death isn't the physician's problem.
No.
And so the physicians, it's not their fault, but the physicians were never trained how to deal with the grieving family or the dying person. So they just avoid the whole thing or they have horrible bedside manner. So what kind of message is that giving to us that death is a failure?
God. Oh, we have to continue this next
time. We do.
There's also all kinds of stuff that I wouldn't mind discussing about these movements that are springing up, like there's a thing called the Death Cafe, and where people gather to talk about mortality, and there's all kinds of consciousness coming up around death in this day and age now. So, and that is something we might want to explore a little bit in a future podcast, because I think this is such an incredibly important topic. I mean, it's going to happen to all of us unless these buggers get a hold of it. And if they do, it's only them that are going to survive anyway.
Well, and it's all just part of that mind net. You know, we're all given this prefrontal cortex to have all these thoughts and look back in at ourselves. But when it comes to issues like this, I do love that line that Krishnamurti says, that a change is possible only from the known to the unknown, not from the known to the known.
Right.
So, you know, in other words, this idea of trying to control ourselves in death and aging, whether we're all there too, Sass and I definitely, I mean, I'm speaking for you now, but I'm assuming that it's not like we're not caught up, but we're just trying to have awareness about it.
That's it.
These concepts are coming from the known to the known, the minds to the minds, and the mind's job is to help us survive and keep going. But in that help of surviving, we're forgetting about the unknown. What's the unknown? What are the ramifications of all of that? The other unknown is this deeper part of us that knows that everything that is going on in existence, including how we die right now and including if this happens in the future, is exactly what it needs to be.
Yeah.
So as long as we're in the known to the known, there's not a lot of room to grow outside of what the mind is creating. And I'm just introducing it to the mix that we try to answer these questions not from our deep-seated beliefs of morals and ethics in society, but try to get to these belief systems that we each individually have as a way to unlock what is holding us back from really, truly living.
Yeah.
Amen.
Amen, sister.
Oh, yeah. Okay, honey.
Thank you so much. And we will be back next time. And thank you, Sass. And thank you, everybody, for listening to our rants. And if you have any topics that you would like us to attempt to discuss, we would love to receive an email from you. And you can do that through functionalyogaonline.com. There's a blog. And we appreciate you. So have a great week. And I hope you do think about these kinds of questions, because they're just the things that help us to dig a little deeper so that the problems that we all have maybe don't look as insurmountable. Yeah?
Yeah. Thanks.
Namaste, everybody.
Talk soon. Ciao.
In playing with Timothy Leary over the years, and he died, and I did a lot of eulogies, and so I had a chance to really reflect about it. And I realized that one of the ways that he and I delighted with each other in what roles were those of fellow adventurers playing at the edge of the mystery. It's what scientists feel. It's what artists feel. It's what humans often feel in almost everything they do when they're really awakened enough. Because you see that moment by moment life is the edge of the mystery. And your mind is constantly saying, there's no mystery here. I understand it. I'm now doing the dishes. That's what I'm doing. And reducing it through your mind so you've taken all the mystery out of it to make yourself feel safe.
Music and editing, special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.